What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prop G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special three-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the Future of Entrepreneurship, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prop G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? It's Friday afternoon, barely on my side afternoon, but well into it on my colleague's side, John Sheeran. I'm Anthony Cosenza. This is the Orange and Black Insider. We are hammering you with content this week. I think this is our fourth or fifth episode this week already, including if you include Sunday. But hey, hopefully we're giving the people what they want, right, John?
I mean, kind of an important game. You would think the content would
slightly.
Yeah, you know. We try to deliver. We try to deliver.
We try. But sometimes I like to think we succeed most of the time, but sometimes we falter, but that's okay. We are going to be taking your questions on this Friday afternoon as the Bengals get set to take on the Kansas City Chiefs at Paycor Stadium. And you got to feed them to us. You got to give us your questions a number of different ways. Call or text 949-542-6241. You can email us theobinsider@gmail.com. You can get at us in a number of ways during live chats or live feeds. There's a comment section on Cincy Jungle on the post there. We're also monitoring the Facebook page, the Cincy Jungle Facebook page, and those comments, as well as the YouTube channel. So no excuses, got to get those in. And then, of course, you can hit us up on Twitter, too, for a couple of questions. We're going to try and keep it to Bengals Chiefs, but if you've got kind of a off-the-wall question, I don't know, we may or may not answer that too, depending on what it is. And if it's not of the offensive ilk, we'll see what we can do. But, of course, the YouTube Super Chats, those take precedence, and we are still supporting the Pollock Family Foundation, so pooling that money there, and those will take precedence overall. But right now, we're taking them as they come our way. Get them to us. We're going to be here for just a little bit. We're not going to be here super, super long, but we'll be here for a little while answering questions here. One of the things I want to talk about, John, just before, because I'm sure everybody now, we always get these, is who's playing, who's not playing, that sort of thing. Do we have the Friday injury report out on Cincy Jungle? Because there were some updates. I know Jerick McKinnon for the Chiefs practiced today, I believe, and he had been out all week. So do we have an update on things there?
So starting for the Chiefs, the only player they declared out was Kadarius Toney, who didn't practice at all this week. Jerick McKinnon, I believe, is questionable since he practiced a couple of times this week. Juju Smith-Schuster, he was listed on the injury report, but he practiced in full, so he's going to be out there. Everyone else for the Chiefs, I believe, is going to play. And for the Bengals side, it's looking like Ja'Marr Chase is going to play. The Bengals haven't officially released an injury report as of this recording, but he was practicing all week. He was limited. They're expecting to play. He's on track. Zach Taylor expects optimism, all that good jazz. I think Joe Mixon is more along the lines of 50-50 because he's still in the concussion protocol. They're going to monitor his situation throughout the weekend. He's less optimistic, I guess, of playing compared to Ja'Marr Chase.
Thank you for the update. Yeah, the McKinnon thing came across the board earlier today that I saw. So that's an interesting player, a guy that, you know, man, when he's healthy, he's a weapon, but he just can't stay healthy. You know, he bounced around. He was a good player for the Vikings years and years ago. I think he went to San Francisco on a big contract, didn't stay healthy there, had a couple of big injuries. And then, of course, you see him go to the Chiefs and you're like, wow, the fit there is kind of a match made in heaven a little bit. So him being out this week, it didn't look promising. And then, you know, it looked like all of a sudden he may play here. So looks like the Bengals are getting healthier and healthier. It looks like Chase is going to play. We're not sure about Mixon there. He's been limited this week. We'll see what happens. John, we have our good friend John from Kentucky on the phone calling us from vacation, he tells me, in a different part of Kentucky. John, what's going on?
Hey, thanks so much for taking my call. Yeah, I've been on vacation this week and just chilling and relaxing, watching a lot of Bengals stuff. So let me get to it. Now, I've been watching the Bengals since 1975. That's as far back as my memory goes. I was a little kid. I remember walking into the den at my grandparents' house. My grandfather smoking a cigar. It's what people did indoors back then. Yeah. There's this guy. He's running off the field, this guy with white hair, and he's shaking his fist. And I'm like, Peppo, he's real happy. And he says, yep, he's the coach of the Bengals. That was Tiger Johnson. And they had beaten Miami. They had beaten Don Shula. And I go, whoa, what a great game. So anyway, I've seen a lot of coaches. So my question to you guys, okay, Zach Taylor has a chance to probably get back to the Super Bowl. The team looks just as good now as they did last year. Not here to bash Marvin Lewis, but Marvin Lewis could not get the team ready for big games. Zach Taylor is as different as night and day. Yes, he's got an elite quarterback, but my question, what kind of credit does Zach Taylor deserve for the Bengals being ready for big games and especially coming out in the second half like they did last year in Kansas City on the road for the AFC Championship and just shutting Patrick Mahomes down? What kind of credit does Zach Taylor deserve?
That's a hell of a question. John, you know that, and we'll take your question off the air in just a second here, but you know that, sure. You know, you and I over the years, when you've called this show and others that I've been on, we've talked a lot of Marvin Lewis and primetime games and primetime record. And I mean, that you and I have gone over this a lot, and I think you and I have been on the same page a lot. So that's a hell of a question. I hope you enjoy the rest of your vacation, sir. Thanks for calling. We'll take your question off
all
the air.
But, and by the way, we will beat the Chiefs on Sunday. I'm very confident. Okay, who day?
All right, thanks, John. That is an excellent question, John Sheeran, because and he always brings the insightful commentary. I love hearing from him. But even when the Bengals were really bad under Zach Taylor, there were a couple of wins that they got in those first couple of seasons where you go, that's the big time win. That's the prime time win. Now, they had some prime time blowouts. They had some other blowouts that you go, oh, man, you know, the one game against the Rams in 2019, I guess, where they got blown out in Europe and, you know, all these other things. But it kind of started with that Steelers game, the old Von Bell, Juju Smith-Schuster game. And it's kind of carried, obviously, through the postseason last year and whatnot. The Bengals have just kind of showed up, been prepared and whatnot. I think a lot of us are saying, well, it's because of the talent. It's because of the poise of Joe Burrow. But you have to credit the coaching staff to some degree, because in a lot of ways, John, in big moments, players stepping up and playing well when other players or other teams would be tight, that's a sign of preparation. That's a sign of confidence. That's a sign of coaching staff being confident in the players they have on the field. So, you know, I feel like he deserves a good amount of credit, but I do think that a lot of the credit also resides in who their quarterback is and his resume through college and early in the pros as well.
I mean, he brought up Marvin Lewis, and we always credit Marvin for, at least in my mind, taking the franchise from like step A to step B, yep. A being the bottom of the barrel and B being relevant. So why would you not credit Zach Taylor from taking them from B to C? And, you know, you mentioned a lot of it has to do with players. Well, Marvin brought in the correct players to change the culture of the team. Why does Zach not get that same credit for bringing in a new wave of players to be big and make those big moments count and actually do something in those moments and in the brightest stages? So yeah, of course, Zach Taylor deserves a ton of credit. He's always going to be the guy that gets the blame when this team underperforms because of the talent yeah. that they've culminated. But that's why on this show, we've both collectively tried to be the voice of reason. Like, hey, when things go bad, it's not always on the head coach. Sometimes players just underperform. The fact that they are in these positions consistently now, ever since they got the quarterback situation figured out, and this team has been very solid, very well balancedly built from bottom to top is because of the head coach and because of the vision that he's had for this team and his eye for bringing in a lot of these different guys that the organization has never even thought to go after before. So of course, Zach Taylor deserves a ton of credit for that.
He does, but the other members of the coaching staff do as well. And you know, I'm namely looking at Lou Anarumo. You know, I mean, I think that the offensive side of the ball is a collective brain trust between Burrow, Callahan, Zach Taylor, Frank Pollock having some input there as well, it would seem. But, you know, I mean, Lou Anarumo, not that he doesn't have the same kind of collective minds with his assistants, but, you know, I think we're looking at him more as a guy that's kind of spearheaded a lot of big performances by his unit the past couple of seasons. And don't get me wrong, the first couple of seasons under Lou Anarumo were rough. There were a lot of performances where you go, oh yeah, yeah. But then, you know, you get some personnel, you get his guys in here and that culture being built. There was an interview this week with Hayden Hurst. I believe it was with Renee Packett, who is the ruler, one of the rulers of the jungle this week, I believe with her husband. Right. And so I think it was on that show, may have been on another, but Hurst talked about the culture that Zach Taylor has built, how you want to be in that locker room and how you desire to be on this team, which is a stark contrast from a lot of other Bengals teams. Not necessarily pointing out Marvin Lewis, because there's a lot of good teams in that in his time as well. And a lot of locker room camaraderie to varying degrees that we knew about there. But this just seems to be a theme primarily over the past couple of seasons that has been built under Zach Taylor, this locker room culture, this culture of guys want to be here. Let's get some of the bigger free agent names and build this team the right way.
And also, when you talk about like the talent that they've brought in and, you know, buying in and all that good stuff, but it's maximizing that talent, which is important too. Like, you look at a bunch of other places in the NFL where some high picks, they don't end up working out. Like, they've had the luxury of drafting high in the draft in two straight years, and they've made the absolute most of it because they've identified the correct talent, and once they're in the system, they've maximized those abilities. Like, how often do you get two, you know, top 30 picks of receivers and the first overall pick of quarterback completely being the very best versions of themselves this quickly in their career? Like, it's the expectation because you draft high and these guys are good coming out of college, but it's not always a guarantee. So the fact that he's instituted a system, scheme, whatever you want to call it, that has maximized these guys' abilities. Like, there's no other place where these guys would rather be, because I mean they're Pro Bowlers. They're going to get paid the very most money out of any players of their position because of how well they've done. And a lot of that has to do with the coaching staff, particularly Zach Taylor.
Yeah, and I think I like what you mentioned there. There's kind of a trust element there a little bit, in that the players see the other players that this group has brought in, Zach Taylor and company brought in, go, wow, they know how to identify talent. They know how to build this team. And then on top of that, too, there's trust with these players in each other on the field, knowing that they're going to be in the right position. They're going to be doing the right things far more often than not, and that's what's netting wins. So really good question by John to kick off the show there. We appreciate hearing from him. We've got some more texts and different things coming our way here, but you're up, John. Let's pick one here. What are you seeing?
Yes, we had a question from Joshua Patterson, and he's asking about Joe Mixon. How do you think the Bengals will handle the Mixon situation if he clears protocol? Do you see them limiting him in the game and using Piran more? So, I mean, Anthony Samaje Piran has proven, if nothing else, he can handle the role as a starting running back in the NFL. And there's a conversation as to whether or not, you know, he's even been better and more consistent than Joe Mixon. So with Mixon potentially back, coming back from his concussion, what do you see his usage compared to Samaje Perine?
So before he got hurt, I mean, obviously not talking about the big Panthers game where he went off. You know, it was kind of like Mixon would probably get about 20 touches a game, about 15 rushes, 5 catches, that sort of thing. And Piran would get about maybe 5 to 7 touches a game, right? A catch or two and a couple of carries. That was kind of the workload. I see that scale, especially with Mixon coming back from injury, I see that scale balancing out at least early on. And I don't know, even 50-50, but I could see a 65-35, 60-40 type of split, maybe giving Mixon more, but P. P. Ryan has proven that he can be reliable and effective in certain spots and in certain situations. He has proven it these past couple of weeks. You don't want to say a guy loses their job to injury and all of that, but I mean, other guys step up. That's just kind of the reality. You gotta go with the hot hand sometimes as well. Now, P. Ryan, let's be honest, last week, I mean, it was, he had some very nice runs, including the big stiff arm and whatnot, but you know, you look at it and I think he had 3.4 yards per carry on the ground, so nothing super exciting there. Mixon, I think, in his season so far was in the mid-threes. I'd have to look up the stats right now, but mid-threes in terms of yards per carry average. So, I mean, no, neither of them are breaking off the big, big runs. It's more just about, you know, who can consistently gain that positive yardage, who can get, you know, drive sustained. And right now it seems like P. Ryan is doing a little bit better job of that. Obviously, recency bias plays into that, though.
Yeah, we've had this conversation before the season when Mixon was struggling. P. Ryan looked pretty good in comparison. When Mixon's healthy, like, they're going to play him more than P. Ryan. Like, that's just, it is what it is. Now, the snap differentiation might be a little bit more equal because it's Mixon's first game back, but he also scored 5 touchdowns in, like, the last full game that he was there.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't think they're going to limit him if they feel like he's healthy enough to play, but P. Ryan will always have a role in pass protection on third down as a receiver now. Like, there's something I don't think that they feel like he can't do compared to Mixon, and I feel like that's important as the season goes along and they have to continue splitting these carries. But I would say if Mixon is healthy enough to play, he's going to get his usual usage. Now, in this specific game, they might not run the ball as much as they did against Carolina or against Pittsburgh in weeks like that, but I feel like if he's healthy enough to be out there, he's going to get his normal amount of snaps.
So, good question from Josh. We've had a phone call. We've had the YouTube chat. Let's go to the Facebook chat. Eileen Barrick says, did Reeds, meaning Justin Reed, I assume, comments provide inspiration or a distraction? In case you missed it, we played it on the show yesterday with Joe Valerio. Chief safety Justin Reed kind of said that he's going to lock, you know, he didn't get names right of the Bengals tight end Hayden Hurst. He called him Tyler Higbee. And then, of course, there was, I'm going to lock Higgins down. He kind of had a brain fart, so to speak, about Higgins' name and whatnot. So, you know, he kind of provided a little bit of bulletin board material, so to speak, in the media. And then you had Hurst kind of fire back saying, you know, I'm not the guy you want to piss off type of thing. And so I kind of think that, again, the Bengals are not favored at home. A lot of people are thinking the Chiefs are going to march right in there and beat them. A lot of prognosticators are saying that. You know, there's a lot of talk of still the Bengals not being the class necessarily of the AFC. They're talking of the Chiefs, the Bills. They were talking about the Titans in that regard before last week. And even after that win, the Bengals still aren't talked about in terms of upper echelon AFC teams. I just feel like, John, that this team likes to be doubted. This team plays well when its backs are against the wall, so to speak. They were 0-2, and Zach Taylor told us to calm down and relax and things will come together, and here they are. They go on a 7-2 run. So I don't know that it was a distraction. I think it's either inspiration or not really anything. The Bengals were already inspired enough for this game.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the only distraction for them would be like if someone's gassing them up, like, and that clearly wasn't the case here. So I think you got a point there. They thrive on being doubted. They thrive on any sort of motivation that they can get their hands on. I think for the most part in the NFL, bulletin board material is a little bit overplayed and overrated. Like, this happened last year. I think it was like Logan Wilson commenting on Lamar Jackson, and he said something that was transcribed as, like, you know, insulting towards Lamar Jackson, and like, oh, that's bulletin board material. I mean, maybe not. At the end of the day, I don't think it really pushes the needle for some people. But when you have a matchup that's this even between both teams, I think the Bengals, with their mindset right now, last week was so huge, and we saw like how much they were clearly listening and hearing the talk about the strength of schedule that they have to play. And they really kind of weaponized that into, like, no, we don't have to play them. You're not locked in. Like, I'm not locked in this room with you. You're locked in this room with me. You got to face us. You got to play us. And that was so huge with last week. And I feel like this only kind of further ignited that. So I don't think it's a distraction. I think it just adds more fuel to the fire.
Yeah, absolutely. Where are we going next, John?
Let's see here. There was one early on. I'm buying time, so I don't have any dead air here. As we all like to do. There was one question about Tyler Boyd.
Yeah, was it Robert Corkonen? Yeah, here we go. Asking about, how important do you guys feel that one? Okay.
Yeah, how important do you guys feel bringing Tyler Boyd into the game early? Anthony, this is interesting to me because last week I thought was a good opportunity for Tyler Boyd and Joe Burrow to kind of reignite their connection against the Steelers. Boyd had 2 receptions on 6 targets, and I went back and looked. Like, you have to go back to the Andy Dalton era for a game where Tyler Boyd had that many targets and that few amount of receptions. You can basically bet every single time that Boyd is going to haul in at least 50% of the passes getting thrown his way. And then against the Titans, he fell down on a route based off of, coming out of his break, kind of tripping on the Titans field. He had one really clutch catch on the 3rd and short, but other than that, he was more or less a non-factor in that game. So this has been multiple games now where Tyler Boyd's kind of been an afterthought in the Bengals offense and hasn't been a thing since, 2017 when he was struggling as a second-year player. I don't think it's out of the conversation for Boyd to be one of the leading receivers in this game. The Chiefs this season have been notoriously bad at covering slot receivers. Now, whether or not it happens early and often in the game remains to be seen. I would imagine that in Jamar Chase's first game back, they try to get him comfortable, maybe generate some easy yardage for him rather than Boyd in that sense. But Boyd had a clutch touchdown against the Chiefs last year in the division winning game. That was the throw that Burrow said, he told Colin Cowherd that was the throw that I was maybe the most proud of in my career, just about how perfectly placed it was, how perfectly executed that play was, and it was. He's a red zone fiend when it comes to the situation, so I wouldn't be surprised if Boyd has a good game. I don't know if he's going to get involved early and often, but I wouldn't be surprised if he has success against the Chiefs' slot defenders.
I would not be surprised either, and I think I think there's kind of a weird correlation here because there's been I would have expected with Chase out of the lineup, he's going to get more targets, he's going to get more looks, he's going to get more production. And it's almost the opposite. It's almost like he feasts more when Chase is in there, Higgins is in there, and he's able to kind of not be focused on as much. He gets the single coverage. And, the Bengals need to play across the middle of the field, a short intermediate route, and he's the guy that's there. Chase out of the lineup, which does not happen very often at all, kind of has dwindled his numbers, particularly the last couple of weeks. Now, against the Steelers, I believe it was, the Bengals just what Burrow did is he transitioned from player to player really nicely in terms of, hey, this situation and this drive kind of dictates more usage of this player. And so I think at the end of the Steelers game, Boyd had a couple of critical catches wherein he was quiet. And that's a team he plays usually very well against, regardless of who the quarterback is. So that was a little surprising to me, but I think oddly enough, with their star receiver coming back, you would think that that's going to be a guy that takes the lion's share away of his production and whatnot. I actually think it'll open things up more for him as we go forward. So potentially, we're going to see more and more Tyler Boyd here. There are a couple of times in his career where there's kind of some ebbs and flows where he's a high producer, high volume guy, and then he kind of lulls a little bit anyway. So it just kind of happens. And I assume that, he's going to be a guy that gets in the mix here pretty soon. But I find it, pretty surprising and pretty odd how that ends up working out. It just seems that he just doesn't come up as big when Chase is out of the lineup.
Yeah, and that was the case in 2018 when, AJ Green was injured for a lot of that season and Tyler Boyd's production actually dwindled once Green left the field. Even though he still ended up having a career year from a season-wide standpoint, his efficiency and his overall production wasn't as good when he wasn't on the field. And that's not an indictment against Tyler Boyd, but like you said, once you have those two horses, as Joe Burrow likes to call them, on the outside, it opens up a lot for Tyler Boyd over in the middle.
What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prof G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special 3-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the Future of Entrepreneurship, a Prof G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prof G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, John, we got a caller, another regular calling in here. It's Mr. Terrell calling and checking in. Terrell, what's going on, bud?
How you guys doing?
We're doing good, man. Big game this weekend, you know?
Oh, yeah. Really.
Have you heard?
Big game, man. I heard about it, but I ain't scared. I heard about all the locking the people up and all that.
Yep.
But I got to say, though, man, our weapons is explosive. They are more experienced. They ready. Not to say that they not either, though, but I just think we're a little more hungry now. Zach, he's a good coach, man. I got to give it to him. And I just believe we're going to come out top at least by a touchdown.
At least by a touchdown.
Okay. I think so, man.
All right.
I think so. And real quick before I go, man, I just want to say, Lou, man, I'm sorry, man, but it looks like he might be a head coach or something soon.
Yeah.
Hopefully not sooner. And Cam, Taylor Britt, and Bosa, they my rookies of the year, man. They my rookies of the year. And I see your Trolls are doing your thing, man, but we need some help trying to find a coach over in Cincinnati, man.
Can talk about that one. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just saying, though, I mean, but you and Taylor Williams, y'all doing y'all thing, but we need a new coach, man. And God bless and who they, man, but we definitely gonna make the playoffs, and I think we're gonna win in New York.
All right. Good hearing from you, man. Thanks for checking in.
No problem. Have a good one.
All right, you too. So talking about the coaching thing here, John, I know Lou Anarumo got some looks and love last year as kind of a guy that would be potentially in the mix for a head coaching position. I think if I remember correctly, he was interviewed. I got to go back. I think he was on an interview list for maybe the Broncos. I'll have to double check that. But at any rate, I think, not to get, again, be super dramatic and hyperbolic about stuff, I think this game, if he does it again against Kansas City, if his unit performs again against Kansas City, whether it's a second half shutdown again or just a general, you know, play pretty well, keeps the points down, and he has the formula potentially to beat Patrick Mahomes three straight times, regardless of how this season ends up, I think that this is going to be a game where other teams are going to take note. And I know it's not in vogue around the league to hire a defensive coordinator. You want the young offensive coordinator, innovative mind type of thing. And this ascension, if he does get a head coaching job, it is so much like Mike Zimmer in terms of waiting and waiting and waiting and finally getting an opportunity, finally shining, and then potentially getting this head coaching opportunity. So while I would hate to see him go, I would be very happy for him, but I think this particular game will potentially say a lot for Lou Anarumo as a head coaching candidate somewhere else in 2023, because man, if you're able to stifle the Chiefs three straight times once in the playoffs, that's a big deal.
Yeah. It seems like his biggest competition is D'Amico Ryans, who's the defensive coordinator for the 49ers, also coordinating a very elite defense. And he was involved, I think, I don't know if he was interviewed last year, but his name came up in the conversation about who's next up in the head coaching ranks And like you said, it's very rare for defensive minded guys to be head coaches nowadays because of how the NFL has been trending. So it feels like maybe one is all you can expect in any given year. And that's probably going to be DeMeco Ryans this season. On top of the fact that Anarumo is probably, what, 20 years older than him. So maybe teams want to go more of a younger route. And it ultimately depends on what Anarumo wants to do. Like, I think in general, you can assume that anytime you get an opportunity, a legit opportunity to be a head coach, more times than not, those guys are going to take that. But we don't really know personally what Anarumo wants. This is his fourth year as a defensive coordinator. He might just like what he has in Cincinnati and might just want to stick around. And it might just be the fact that the perfect opportunity hasn't come up for him, or maybe won't come up for him in this coaching circle. So I do think that there's ample amounts of respect for what he's done, specifically against the best offenses in the NFL. But yeah, it's far from a certain thing. Even a successful coordinator gets a job because of just how the NFL has been trending.
Brian in Iowa, resident stand-up comedian here. Broncos made the right head coaching choice. They're going the unproven younger offensive mind. Obviously talking about Nathaniel Hackett, who is having a rough season there. Where are we going next, Sean?
Well, just real quick, because I was really in my bag last year when the Bearcats were on the prowl for the college football playoff. You've been very quiet about USC this season. Is it because they haven't locked up that final spot? Like
that comes tonight. That happens tonight. I just because I'm so used to the Saturday schedule, I was like, oh, they play tomorrow night. But I was like, oh no, that's tonight. This is, for those who do not know, the Trojans, I think, are 10-1 right now. The only loss they have suffered is against Utah in Utah by a point, with Utah going for a 2-point conversion at the very end, and the USC defense couldn't stop them. And this is the team that they are playing for the Pac-12 championship again. So the only team they have lost to this year who has given them problems, that's who they play this year. Or right now for the Pac-12 title. And obviously if they win that game, you would think that they're going to be in that top four and in the playoff, which is an incredible turnaround for the Trojans there. But I think I'm more kind of just stunned at what I've seen from them, because they just, especially on offense, man, they just get after it. And they lost Travis Dye of the Dye family dynasty in the Pac-12, brother of I think it was Tony Dye, who was with the Bengals, former safety, played at UCLA. They lost him to an injury, and then they just kind of seemingly haven't really missed a beat, and they keep going. But this is going to be a tough one for them. They're going to need to put up a lot of points and get basically one more stop than they did last time.
When you need points, it's good to have both Caleb Williams and Lincoln Riley kind of spearheading the effort. So
what about UC, man? I mean, Lindsay's asking about it. UC has an open coaching position.
Let's not talk about it. No comment until a hire has been made. Okay. And even then, might still be no comment. We're going to go back to Facebook for this next question from James Hawley. He's asking, who wins the battle in the trenches, the Chiefs defensive line or the Bengals offensive line? And how do you limit Chris Jones? Well, Anthony, I think we can both agree that you don't limit Chris Jones. You can just only hope and pray that he misses some of the sacks, which happened to be the difference in that AFC Championship game. It wasn't always, like, Burrow didn't play fantastic in that game, but the best plays that he made were arguably getting out of the pocket and evading Chris Jones and company and keeping plays alive and converting third downs. And had Chris Jones made one or two more sacks in that game, we talked about this with Joe Valerio, that game probably goes differently. And I think it was interesting, Anthony, when Valerio said that Chris Jones has been playing like a better teammate, and he's been, I guess, more concerned about making sure that plays were finished for his team rather than just him racking up individual production, which is interesting to hear. I don't really know how to feel about that. I feel like as long as you finish sacks, you're helping the team. But, I mean, there's no real limiting Chris Jones. You just got to hope and pray that Cordell Volson and Alex Kapp do their jobs, right?
I would think so. And I found that to be an interesting comment as well. But, I mean, do you know how many, just offhand, do you know how many sacks Chris Jones has on the year?
I believe he has 10, according to PFF.
He does have 10, yeah. So he is getting after it. And he is getting after it at a high level, as he usually does. So this, what's interesting is Joe talked about how he's not really, he's trying not to play hero ball, right? Is what I would call it. You know, he's not trying to do everything himself and getting after it. Maybe he's being a little more team oriented in his mindset, but he's still playing hero ball. He's still getting 10 sacks on the season and getting after it. I think this is a big game, a big barometer game for the Bengals offensive line, the rebuilt unit, because we've talked about how they've done really well on the interior in terms of passing off twists and stunts and whatnot from one and the other. I think it was against Tennessee last week. Karras took a pass off. I believe it was from Kappa, and it ended up leading to the only, you know, he got walked back a little bit, ended up leading to the only sack of Burrow in the game, which was a bummer, but they are far more effective at it this year. You would tend to think that there will be a cleaner pockets this time around for Joe Burrow and more frequently than there was in the AFC Championship game or either game last year. So, yeah, I mean, he's going to be someone to deal with. There is no doubt about it. That interior offensive line that's been rebuilt is going to have their hands full. I think it's a good battle to watch. And, you know, again, 10 sacks is 10 sacks. It's funny to hear him say, oh, he's just, you know, he's kind of playing a more passive role. And I'm looking at the stats going, I don't see that. But I mean, I don't not believe him. I'm sure it is that. But the stats just tell that he's still dominating and not necessarily doing things. Hey, I'm going to open things up for other players, you know?
Yeah, I guess the more I think about it, the more I realize that probably means like playing within the scheme and not like attacking a certain gap when you feel like it's primed to be exploited and therefore kind of leaving other guys out to dry. So if he's playing within more of the confines of what he's asked to do and that's leading to more production, I feel like that is kind of how you lead to the same amount of production or even increased production by not trying to do everything. And I think also an underrated player to watch here, we talked about him leading up to the draft, George Karlaftis. And I feel like he's important to watch just because, you know, of the pressures that the Bengals have allowed this season, most of them have come off the edge. That's where Karlaftis plays. But also the fact that you have a guy in Burrow who's great at extending plays. If you have an equally intense edge rusher who doesn't give up on plays, because that seems to be Karlaftis' greatest strength, like that is going to be interesting to see if he finishes some of those pressures, if he turns those hurries into sacks, if he turns those potential positive plays for the Bengals to negative plays for the Chiefs side. Karlaftis is going to be someone to watch for sure.
Robert asking, are there any Bengals bars in Southern California that you know of? Hey, hit me up on the side, Robert, whether it's direct message or whatnot. There is one in LA. It just kind of depends on where in Southern California you are looking at. I did get in touch with somebody who listens to the show, and they have been watching at this. He, you know, kind of wanted to do a get together thing in more Orange County as well. So it kind of depends on where you're looking at. Hit me up on the side there, and I'll. And if anyone is interested in that, and or if you're in the Southern California area, let me know, and we can try and spearhead a Bengals get together of some kind. Get a venue going, make it a somewhat regular thing. But yeah, let me know, Robert, and I'll cue you in on some of that stuff. So we had a text. We haven't gotten to a text yet. We had a text, John, and it is from Akilah. And this, looking at, you know, just a string of texts from Akilah, who has texted us before, Akilah is a very big draft-focused listener. The last text in January was about what are the top three needs for the Bengals. And then, you know, I love talking future, and a lot of questions will be about this week in the playoffs. So I'll pivot. The top three needs for me for the Bengals: edge rusher, three technique, cornerback. Do you agree with that, and or why or why not?
Yeah, I don't disagree necessarily. I feel like so much is unknown about the future cornerback just because of Cheeto's injury, Eli Apple's becoming a free agent. You like what Taylor Britt has shown in five games, but you know there's still a lot of unknown. Three technique, I feel like, is the most underrated need just because they've had little to no pass rushing production from that spot. They have a lot of guys there, and they have Hill and Carter under contract for a few more years, but they could definitely use a boost there. I think with edge, you're banking on Osai just continuing to grow into the role of being that third edge rusher. Obviously, you're comfortable with the starters, but you could always use more depth there. I feel like offensive tackle is still like the need on the offensive side of the ball, if we're going to include them, that will be most focused on, at least with this team from a long-term perspective. They don't hesitate with addressing that position early in the draft, especially even if they have both starters under contract for the time being. But just because you've dealt with injuries with Lael Collins, you have Jonah Williams not having his best season, also entering the last year of his deal, I wouldn't be surprised if they look at that and say, hey, we need a long term. We have a long term need here. If we have the chance to draft one early in the draft, they're not going to hesitate to pull the trigger there.
Yeah, our buddy Derek from Bengals and Brews, he corroborates there, the orange arrow, Derek Davis. So, again, it's kind of how you put it. It's when you talk about corner and you talk about edge, it's more about what are you going to get out of those investments from the last couple of off seasons in terms of Osai and Cam Taylor Britt. It looks like Taylor Britt's going to be a guy that you can rely on. There are still some rookie mistakes and things being made there, but I've already noticed that similar mistakes or, you know, a lot of mental errors are not part of what's happening there. Right. I mean, I feel like there's some growth that's being seen there, which is really, really positive. And then of course, you know, Osai has all the tools to be successful and be a good, at least situational pass rusher. It's more about just harnessing that potential and kind of being a bit more consistent with it. He does have a sack earlier this year, but other than that, he's been pretty quiet. So yeah, I mean, the Bengals need to get more pass rush help, and that's whether it's the interior. They miss Larry Ogunjobi. I feel like I've said that 18 times on various shows. They miss Larry Ogunjobi and what he brought last year, and they need to find a guy on the interior who can provide some form of a spark, because I think BJ Hill is a very effective player, but BJ Hill is an effective player in the role that he was in last year, or maybe this current role, but with someone heavily rotating in with him as well. And I think that's what made he and Ogunjobi so effective last year, is they moved around a little bit. They were able to kind of spell each other at certain times, and it just worked out very well. And now, you know, because the Bengals are trying to groom other players and they've really increased BJ Hill's role, and rightfully so, he had a good year for him last year. You're just kind of seeing a little bit of BJ Hill still made some plays, but it's not to the same consistency level that we saw last year. And I think that's just really a matter of just snap splitting, right? I mean, and snap splitting with another effective player who is also benefiting from that.
Yeah. More is not always better, I guess, in terms of that's, particular side of things with Hill. He's always been a great run defender. He's always been more of a nose tackle type of player. But yeah, the more times he's in on passing downs, you're going to see that production and efficiency as a pass rusher kind of dip a little bit.
Yeah. We'll get into just a couple more. I think we'll hop on out of here. We've gotten to a lot here. We appreciate all the calls, texts, YouTube chats, all kinds of stuff. This wasn't really and you're up next, John, but I did want to at least acknowledge this on the live chat stream on Cincy Jungle. I've seen only parts of this, but RJ Pro says, Anthony, I know this is off topic, but if you get a chance to interview Bob Trumpy on both his career and the documentary he did on Greg Cook, that would be awesome. So we'll have to look into that. I know our guy Bengal Jim and his crew have had Bob Trumpy on their show before too. So, and I've seen and heard about this documentary. I haven't seen all of it though. So we'll look into that, and hopefully we can get a guy like that on. Bob Trumpy is a Bengals legend in a lot of ways, not only as a player, but had a very long broadcasting career and a good one there. So we'll look into that, but where are we going next, John? We'll get out of here in a couple minutes, I think here. But are you seeing something else striking you?
Yeah. So let's address one of our favorite players, Mark Fry, is asking, are we going to see more of Trent Irwin now that Jamar Chase is presumably going to return as a starter and this offense doesn't like to rotate out their starting three receivers, and the only time that they do come out is on run plays when they have guys like Stanley Morgan run blocking. But Irwin elevated himself to be the number three receiver when Jamar Chase wasn't healthy, so it leads us to believe that he's probably number four on the depth chart. So yeah, we'll see him out there from time to time. I mean, even when he was starting, he didn't get a ton of targets necessarily. It was still T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd getting the lion's share, but there's something to be said about a guy who truly does make the most of his opportunities. And if Joe Burrow sees him with a one-on-one on a crucial down, I don't think that he's going to be shy in targeting him and featuring him on some of these plays. So more Trent Irwin? No, because he's not going to play as much, but to him getting those chances to make those plays when he is out there. Yeah. I think that will remain to be the case for as long as he's in Cincinnati.
I think he's earned a shot, and I think it. I don't think he's going to be getting a ton more looks or snaps or anything like that with Chase back. And by the way, I'm seeing stuff on the Twitter timeline that it looked like Chase went full today. So that's good stuff. But here's the thing. I still see him as a guy when you don't expect it. You don't expect the ball to come his way in a big game, in a big moment. All of a sudden, he's going to come up with that first down catch. That's what happened last week, right? I mean, he made that awesome catch along the sideline, back shoulder throw. By the way, go check out JT O'Sullivan's podcast if you have not yet. I think it's the Quarterback School, right? Isn't that what it is? The episode he did this week on back shoulder throws and Joe Burrow against Titans, that was like an excellent – it's like 18 minutes. It's awesome. And he highlights one of those catches by Irwin there. I think that's where you're just going to see him. You're just going to see him get those 1 to 2 catches a game potentially. And one of them is going to come at a critical time when you least expect it. It may not be a touchdown. It may just be a chain moving play where you go, nice play. Let's pick it up and keep moving. And I think not to disrespect what he does or what he has done. I just feel like it's going to be one of those types of things where he just makes that one play in a game where you go, awesome. Let's hang our hat on that and move on, you know?
Yeah.
I think we got a couple of super chats here late. Look at this. Well, this isn't really a question from Houday, but thank you so much. It's going to help out the Pollock Family Foundation. Jamar Taylor Higby will burn Reed. Okay. I think just real quick to touch on that. What do you think about, what are your expectations for Chase this week? I mean, I just said I saw on the timeline it looks like he's going full here. I think we're going to put up the full Friday injury report here in just a little bit on Cincy Jungle. But do you expect him to just come out and guns a-blazing? Do you expect him to kind of have a little bit of rust? Do you expect him – I think we've talked about not really expecting him to be limited in terms of a pitch count or snap count or something like that unless he shows that he is not – feeling 100%, but do you expect him to just come out and, hey, here's 10 catches, 140 yards? what are you expecting out of him on this?
I don't know about production. I just feel like if he's playing, he's going to be 100%. They've handled this pretty well, and I don't think that they would play him if they didn't feel like he could handle his full workload. Now, if that workload comes with another career day against the secondary, then so be it. But if he's out there, I feel like he's going to be fine. And I don't know if they're going to be targeting Justin Reed more than they wanted to, but I wouldn't be surprised if that was also the case.
I'm not really sure. Part of me thinks, you know, if he took a full year off of football and then came back and did what he did last year at the pro level, I tend to think that a month off wouldn't accumulate too much rust. But, we saw what the summer looked like going up into his first pro season. So you never know. But I tend to think that he'll be fine. And I do think that, you know, I think Burrow is showing that he trusts T. Higgins more and more, not necessarily over Chase or anything like that, but he trusts him on a lot of throws and a lot of plays. And so I still think we're going to get a high dosage of T. Higgins there as well. We got one more from Bengals Browns football here. When the Bengals beat the Chiefs for the third time, how do you think they will handle being talked about as the best team in the league? Ooh, wow. So if I remember correctly last year, John, I think it was after the first Raiders game where people started saying, hey, this team arrived. They're for real. They're going to make the playoffs. They may go after the AFC North crown. And then I think that's when some stumbles occurred, if I'm not mistaken, with the 49ers game, with, there were a couple stumbles in there where you go, oh, what happened? Obviously, earlier in the season, they were starting to get some good pub and doing, you know, winning some games. And then they had that Jets debacle that went right into the bye. And then they came out with the Raiders game and needed that one. So, it's last year, their handling of success was kind of mixed bag. I tend to think this is just a different team based on everything they went through last year, how close they were to winning it all. And I kind of feel like this is just jobs not done type of mindset, regardless of the wins. But this week's going to tell us a lot, obviously.
So I actually looked this up before the show. The Bengals are one of four teams to beat Mahomes in two consecutive meetings, along with, I believe, the Patriots, the Colts, surprisingly enough, and another team. No team has beaten him three consecutive times that they faced. And if they were to do this on Sunday, they would have done it in an 11-month span. So, yeah, I feel like at that point, because they did something so unprecedented against the best quarterback in the NFL, they would get that type of publicity. And like we saw last year, like you said, they didn't really handle that as well, because I look back to that Ravens game when things really started to, I mean, I came on the radio and said, yeah, they're a legit contender. Then they laid a stinker against the Jets. I think going through everything last year, it taught them a lot about how to handle success. And I feel like they are in a better position mentally to take it on and go 1 week at a time. But it only takes 1 week and running into a team that's a little bit more hungrier than you and just handles things better than you on that specific day. So we'll see. I feel like they are primed and prepped to handle that type of stardom and everything that comes with that, but they got a job to do first.
They have a job to do first. That is for sure. Thank you, Bengals Browns football. And it would not be a complete show without yet another donation, a YouTube super chat donation from Mr. Whisper. Thank you so much. I'm worried about not having Chidobe Awuzie in this game. Is there anything encouraging you can say about how Cam Taylor-Britt has played to alleviate these worries? Physical is how he's played. And I will say the beats that he has had, this is going to sound really weird. The beats that he has had, and I'm thinking back to the Terrace Marshall touchdown in the end zone, and I'm thinking back to the catch last week by the rookie Burks. They're kind of jump balls. He got mossed a little bit on them. And they were really kind of more great plays by wide receivers than bad positioning or bad plays by him. I noticed he had his head around. I noticed he had a hand up. He was kind of there in position on both of those plays, and both the guys just kind of made good plays. Thankfully, neither were devastating in either result and didn't cause a loss. And what I've seen, I think, in terms of alleviating worries is I've just seen some growth, and I've seen a little bit more confidence from him week by week. Now, this is going to be a challenge this week, not only because of the team speed that he faces, but, you know, I kind of was thinking, John, about, you know, the Tyreek Hill not being there type of thing and how big of a weapon that is. What the Chiefs have kind of been able to do is replicate a lot of what Hill brought by committee. Right. They just kind of, this guy can do a little bit of this. This guy can do a little bit of this. This guy. And so they've been able to replicate that production through like three different players as opposed to one all-star player. Right. And so I think Taylor-Britt has his hands full this week in a lot of regards. But, you know, I think him playing physical, he just doesn't look completely lost to me out there, I guess is what, and that may or may not be the best compliment, but you've seen corners out there as rookies that are all turned around. They're all mixed up. They don't know where they're supposed to go. And if you remember, John, in the interview we had with him in the summer, he talked about how Lou Anarumo and his coaching staff talked about, you know, not making the same mistake twice and not, you know, really having things down pat before, you know, if they work on something in practice, it was like, let's not go full go yet until you completely comprehend exactly what we're doing. And then once you do, then we're going to practice at full go. And I think you're seeing some of that translate so far.
Yeah, I think it's not only been the jump balls. Unfortunately, there's also been some big plays down the field that Taylor-Britt has either allowed or a bad pass has prevented it from him
being
limelight as well. So yeah, there's been a lot of instances where he's passing off routes a little bit late, or he's not recognizing when routes kind of come into his zone and he's not picking it up. Now, the good thing is this is not his first game out there against the Kansas City Chiefs. So he's got experience and he's watched tape of himself make these mistakes. And hopefully the more time that he's practiced and played as a starter, the slower things tend to be for him and things kind of get slowed down and he's able to recognize these things quicker. I would say that in the Bengals shutting down of Mahomes in both of those second halves, they ended up playing basically like cover one robber where they have like a safety kind of over the middle of the field to intercept some of these over the middle intersecting routes, and a lot of that has to do with funneling things to the middle and passing in breaking routes off towards the safety over the middle of the field. And that's going to be up to Taylor Britt and Neil Apple on the boundaries to always be playing, you know, quicker than what Mahomes and his receivers are doing. So it's going to test the weaknesses of Taylor Britt, but in terms of what you said, the strengths, like, he can disrupt timing on routes because of his physicality in man coverage. I have total confidence in him being able to hold up in man coverage. I don't know how much they're going to do that against the Chiefs offense because of how much success they've had in just dropping back eight in zone. So I think it's really going to test Taylor Britt's, you know, mental capacities in this one. But the positive thing and the encouraging thing I would say is that he's had playing experiences and he's gotten better as the weeks have gone on.
And with the athletic profile, the high-end athletic profile coming out of college, what is encouraging, I think, also is his ability to recover if he makes a bad rep or a bad play in the play. His ability to recover is likely a higher, you know, there's a higher propensity for him to be able to recover on a bad play within the play than other corners that don't have that same athletic profile. So, but good question. And thank you again, Mr. Whisper, for yet another generous super chat donation. We appreciate it. John, any others that we stuck around longer than we were gonna, but we had some awesome donations through the super chats and obviously some great questions throughout. Any others that you think we need to get to that we did not try to get through to a lot of different platforms here?
Yeah, so not a question, but thank you to Hude, Bengals Browns Football, and obviously our good friend Mr. Whisper for donating to the Pollock Family Foundation. Also, the Hayden Hurst Foundation is going to be the direct beneficiary of Derek Davis and Bengals and Brews. They're doing a fundraiser where you can enter $10 a spot for a raffle for a Joe Burrow painting, so definitely check out what they're doing over there. So just passing the word along, helping our friend Derek Davis. So thank you, Derek, and you guys over there for helping out a great cause for Hayden Hurst.
Yeah, that's awesome. And, it's so great to see Hurst really kind of enjoying his time in Cincinnati, thriving in this offense, and obviously a lot of awareness. We know that Bengals fans are really, really awesome about bringing awareness and supporting charities. So between Pollock Family Foundation, the Hayden Hurst Foundation, you saw Drew Garrison talk to Ted Karras this week in the Marici Village through the Cincy Hat, cincyhat.com. Go check that out. A lot of good causes supported by Bengals players and being supported by Bengals fans too. So appreciate you bringing that up, John. I was sifting through the comments for questions and I didn't see that one till late. So appreciate you bringing that up. Anything else, my friend, before what's your predict? We didn't even do predictions because we were talking with Joe Valerio yesterday. Let's get a little predictions and what you think is going to happen this weekend as the Bengals host the Chiefs for the AFC Championship rematch, just different venue.
So I don't think they're going to hold Mahomes to 3 points in the second half again. I feel like that's a two and done situation there, but it's stupid for me to count out the Bengals in this one. I feel like it's beating Mahomes 3 times in the row is really tough and it's never been done before. But if any team can do it, like, this team is built for that. And I feel like their defense has grown. It's stayed consistent. It's stayed together. They've helped Taylor Britt along in these past couple of weeks. And I feel like they're going to do enough to potentially outscore them in this game. And I'm not betting against Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, and Tyler Boyd all playing on the field against the secondary, which they've had success with in the past. So with all that said, I'm going to go 34 Chiefs, 31 Bengals.
Oh, John, and we know why and what happens when you, my friend, pick
not always the
Bengals to lose. I know, but often I don't know. I have a weird feeling about this one. I have a feeling that Cincinnati can just do just enough, make just enough plays. I'm really impressed at how the Chiefs have been able to rebound without Tyreek Hill, as I mentioned before. I am very impressed. I think they're going to be very, very good. It would not surprise me at all if the Chiefs win this game. I just think, I don't know. I think this little last by this dig by Justin Reed here, I don't think that sat well with a lot of, and I think they already had enough motivation as it was, like we talked about earlier in this show. I don't think that sat well with a lot of guys in that locker room. And if you know this team, if you saw what happened last week with the kneel downs and the emotion and the passion with what happened after Titans players were supposedly, I guess, diving at the Bengals offensive lineman's legs at the end of the game, that sort of thing. And all of the talk going into that one about the Bengals are kind of fraudulent and all that kind of stuff. And here they are, they're 7-4 coming off a big win out of Tennessee. And so I'll say 31-30 Bengals. Maybe a last second Evan McPherson kick again. Thriller. We'll see what happens. Would not surprise me outcome either way, but I will go with the Bengals in this one, 31-30. We'll see what happens. And with that being said, enjoy your weekend. Enjoy the game coming up. Are you going to this one, John? I don't remember if you are.
I am not, but I will be watching. I will be watching.
Okay. I'll be watching somewhere, somehow. Cool. Well, we're going to be doing a post-game show. We'll be doing the aftermath, John and myself, beginning of next week, and then we'll again be sticking to that new format of shows. Hopefully you are able to join us how you can, whether that's on our YouTube channel, the Cincy Jungle Facebook page for the video side of things. You got to subscribe to our YouTube channel to be notified when we go live, when new content is available. There's an icon right beneath John and underneath that SB Nation logo down there. So click that little orange and black insider icon if you have not yet. So thank you for your support there. And then of course, all the audio stuff from the Cincy Jungle podcast channel can be found on your favorite audio streamer. You got to subscribe to the channel there, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, any of them were there. Check it out. Have a good weekend, John. Thanks for all your work this week, man. I know we've done a lot, but it's kind of flown by, and I feel like we've had some fun shows this week for a big game coming up.
Oh, we work for games like this, man. That's what it's all about.
Grind. We grind. That's right. Take care.
What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prof G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special three-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the future of entrepreneurship, a Prof G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prof G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.